We are in paper 37, section 4, which is on old single column, page 409. And before we start section 4, let me just read those last two little paragraphs of about the worlds of the archangels there at the end of the previous section, the end of section 3. As you recall, those are pretty intriguing statements, and especially that first of those two paragraphs. And we talked about them a little bit last time, but I promised I'd open them up again in case there was some follow-up questions that people had. So let me just do that, and we'll that'll help us to get back in the swing of it here. Remember, we're going through this paper that has this what kind of seems like a laundry list of different beings, and we worked through the brilliant evening stars and the archangels. So now we're going to go on to this next group, but let's see what they said about. Remember, we're at the same time that we've been going through all these beings in these papers. We've been working our way around Salvington, those primary satellites, and we're on the seventh group of the seventh group of seven primary worlds on our way around here with the archangel world. So. The worlds of the archangels, the seventh group of the encircling Salvington worlds with their associated satellites, is assigned to the archangels. Sphere number one and all of its six tributary satellites are occupied by the personality record keepers. Remember, I commented we immediately should be recognizing why it was the first one, because that's the father-like world and the sevenfold pattern, and that's Father's the one that bestows personality. And so that made sense. This enormous core of records of recorders busy themselves with keeping straight the record of each mortal of time, from the moment of birth up through the universe career, until such an individual either leaves Salvington for the super universe regime or is blotted out of recorded existence by the mandate of the Ancients of Days. It is on these worlds that personality records and identification sureties are classified, filed, and preserved during that time which intervenes between mortal death and the hour of repersonalization. The resurrection from death. Just one little thing I wanted to bring in that didn't come up last time. Again, to appreciate in the context of this section, we know there's lots of places they refer to the archangels being involved in some of these activities in different places in the book, but here you are right in this, in the section about them. And there may be things that are there that aren't anywhere else that might help you to understand exactly why you find them involved in various things at various points in the Revelation. This whole issue of why are they, rather than some other being in the local universe, why are they the ones that are involved with personality records and identification sureties? Why can they be so sure about exactly what's going on with personality, so that they can testify, for instance, that the resurrection from the death that they're referring to there, that, yep, the exact same personality that used to be identified with that mortal's energy system is now re-identified with this Marantia energy system. They testify that the exact same personality has re-engaged, re-identified. How can they be so sure? Remember what they said right at the beginning of this, in that very first paragraph of the section. They are the highest type of high spirit being, produced in large numbers in a local universe. Okay, they have a very high, pure, direct relationship with spirit substance, unlike lower beings in the local universe. Personality is spirit pattern. Okay, so a lower being is seeing that engagement of spirit pattern to spirit substance through a fog. Okay, and they can't be exactly sure about everything. You know, they're looking up, you know, through a fog of not pure spirit, you know, vision. But these beings are right there. It's right in front of them. They can see it exactly without any intervening blurring of their sight of what's going on. So they can see exactly how that that spirit substance is being patterned by spirit pattern, by personality. Okay, so that's, obviously we don't understand, you know, some of the details of, why it is that they're high enough and still a local universe being or things like that. But, I mean, you basically, you have some idea of, you know, how to make sense of this, why they're assigned that duty. It's not surprising since they are the highest ones. Yep.
I know this was probably covered last week, which I've forgotten. And the fact that we have a division of headquarters here on this planet,
right.
What on earth can happen? How can you? It just seems so. What are we going to be doing here?
Right. Yeah. So for those of you on the webinar, he's bringing up that giant question. About the divisional headquarters, you know, we mentioned, do you grasp the significance of the fact that your lowly and confused planet has become a divisional headquarters for the universe administration and direction of certain archangel activities having to do with the Paradise Ascension Scheme? Rhetorical question, hopefully. Obviously we can't grasp that directly, but we spoke to that last time, of why they, said that anyway. But, to the direct point, certain archangel activities. Okay, we have a few things about what the archangels do that relate directly to us in our ascension scheme revealed to us. But the zillions of other things that they're indispensable for, we have no idea. So
divisional center, that's big.
Right. So they took a whole division of the activities. So what that means technically. You have all the activities that were on Salvington. Prior, to them setting up this headquarters, and it's obviously broken up into divisions. They have different divisions of activity. And they took some whole division of that activity and moved it off. So that's not done on Salvington anymore. That whole division of their activity is here. See, and you can wonder, it's like, well, maybe it has nothing to do with the Ascension Scheme. What if that division of their activity has to do with one of the other schemes, one of the other six schemes? Okay, see, that would really foreshadow something we speculate about sometimes, that Michael might have plans to bring one or more of the other schemes into some very direct relationship with the Ascension Scheme on this world at some point in the future. See? Like, for instance, you could get some sun visiting this world that's not even revealed in the fifth epical revelation. That's related to one of those other schemes. Right. See, so there could be something really, really normal that could happen, even more than everything that's happened so far. Even having the Creator Son coming here is, it's not typical for a given local universe, but, one world in every local universe has it. So, there's 700,000 of them, so it's not like it's that rare, right? But, right. right. You get my point. I mean, it's, there's rare and then there's really rare, okay? Where maybe one world in the 7 trillion does something, right? A unique thing. Now, you remember how many times they say, you know, we're unique or relatively unique, you know, how they use that word unique a lot of times, you know, talking about us, you know. So, all right, I mean, it's a very deep mystery. And again, just to remind you, even for the lower beings on this world, that's a mystery, because, you know, these beings are, you know, the highest, like the secondary midwayers, they really can't relate to these beings. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's why they had to use, like we mentioned, they had to use the contact personality for an archangel to give us a paper, because they couldn't just dictate it to a secondary midwayer. Right, so it's not like the midwayers can walk up and investigate this divisional headquarters and figure out exactly what's going on either. Right? I mean, you know, we don't even know if, I mean, a lot of it may be completely invisible to them, you know, just like it is to us. Right? So, it's a deep mystery. But in terms of why they said it, I'll just remind you again. I mean, the point is, you don't have to know what it is. The fact that it is here, okay, and not, you know, on Salvington anymore, okay? You don't blow up this world. Oops, the local universe lost that whole part of its, you know, functioning. That's the end of the local universe. No, this world is going to be just fine now, okay? You know, I mean, you can be completely confident that nothing is going to get out of hand on this planet, okay? They've built on solid ground, you know? That's just, you know, a very direct testimony, you know, that no one, that it's not sand. That it's rock.
We want to go on Michael's word.
Okay, right. You know, so you effectively are living on Salvington now. Okay, and Salvington's not going to go away.
Cool. Right.
Okay. Is there any other things? You know, I mean, I think we covered those often controversial issues about, you know, the whole bit about from the time moment of birth on, and I, you know, if everyone's clear on that. All right. Should we go ahead and move forward then? All right. Okay. I just didn't want to do that passage any disservice, because it is a very, very key passage, and has, you know, been no end of confusion and controversy over the years of people trying to understand how to put all the pieces together in the revelation. All right, so let's move on to the next section here then.
Section 4, Most High Assistants. The Most High Assistants are a group of volunteering beings of origin outside the local universe who are temporarily assigned as central and super universe representatives to, or observers of, the local creations. Their number varies constantly, but is always far up in the millions.
Okay, you know, we always want to see if we can start to be understanding what's going on. You know, you notice they just that little statement, and they made a paragraph break, so they're wanting you to pause and seeing if you can get yourself oriented a little bit. You notice you've got these beings. They've decided to call them Most High Assistants. Like, okay, assistance. So they apparently are assisting. That's straightforward enough. But why Most High? Well, as you start reading, you see, oh, they're not local universe. They're from the central and super universe level of things. Oh yeah, we've reminded ourselves that those Verondadex that we call the Most Highs, you know, the Verondadex have this very tight linkage to the Ancients of Days and the super universe regime, you know, and the Ancients of Days have a very tight relationship to the central universe with the Eternals of Days, okay? Oh, so they must be just wanting to, you know, reinforce it like that you multiply use that ancient designation of priest of God Most High that we have from Melchizedek, you know, to use that to express this idea that they're not just high in the local universe, but they're most high, which means they're sort of higher. right, than the local universe. You know, at least in terms of, you know, maybe what they're doing is down at the level of the local universe, but the fact that they have this linkage to that which is above is sort of seeding, you know, a potential for us to finally, as a local universe, get up there. You know, so they're part of that, just like the, you know, the fundamentally the Verondadex are, as those assistants of the Most High of the Ancients of Days. You know, why they're so, hence why they're called the Most Highs. They, you know, if someone couldn't clamp down on a rebellion in a local system, you know, the local universe is never going to get up there as part of the super universe. So again, it's like the, you know, it's like that which is above sort of injecting in various ways and either guiding or seeding, you know, the potential to, or the ability to finally get up there with the eye level of the super universe at some point in the future. Okay, so that's that, you know, that apparently is what they're aiming at there. You know, maybe just, you know, okay, far up in the millions, but it still is only millions. So, you know, we don't need, you know, hundreds of trillions of these beings. Part of the reason is just simply it's an evolutionary domain. Things are not micromanaged, right? I mean, they're allowed to slop around a bit, right? That's part of the process. So you don't need, you know, these guys standing on every street corner, you know, directing traffic. All right.
From time to time, we thus benefit from the ministry and assistance of such paradise origin beings as perfectors of wisdom, divine counselors, universe censors, inspired Trinity spirits, Trinitized sons, solitary messengers, Supernaphim, Seconaphim, Tertiaphim, and other gracious ministers who sojourn with us for the purpose of helping our native personalities in the effort to bring all Nebadon into fuller harmony with the ideas of Orvinton and the ideals of paradise.
Okay, two things there. One, just the fact that you misspoke there and said universe censors rather than universal censors just reminded me, you know, I should stress that. You know, if you haven't gotten that precise in your recognition when you're reading in various places, you know, you need to notice the difference between them using universe as an adjective and universal as an adjective. You know, they'll say like universe mother. Okay, and they're talking about a creative mother spirit. You know, and by universe, see, they mean the local universe. Okay, see, so here we don't have a universe sensor. You know, it's not a local universe being. It's a universal sensor. It's above the local universe level. You know, so if that hasn't, you know, if you hadn't picked up on that, it's a good point right there to stress that. You know, to really notice whether or not it has an AL suffix on it or not, so that you are putting it in the appropriate place in the hierarchy. Okay, and then the biggie in that is right at the end there. You know, we were just talking about how this is obviously what they must be up to, is, you know, making sure that the local universe is heading towards being settled in light and life and becomes part of the super universe at some point. But look at how they express that. The effort to bring all Nebadon into fuller harmony with the ideas of Orvinton and the ideals of paradise. Okay, you know, very precisely trying to get you to contrast the fourth epical revelation to the fifth epical revelation. Okay, Michael was here in the fourth epical revelation very much to get us as individuals to choose to put ourselves in relationship with the ideals of paradise. Okay, you know, and he directly told the apostles, you know, don't worry about the, you know, ideas of God. You know, just focus on, you know, getting that spiritual relationship to the ideal, you know, of God's infinite and eternal nature. You know, it's just about the ideal, the spark, the starting of the process. Okay. But once you're started, you're immersed in the local universe, or in the local universe, which is part of a greater pool of the super universe of Orvinton. Okay, and fundamentally, what Orvinton is the ideal of the ideals of paradise downstepped in a very specific way into ideas. Right? Just like we have to try to do, not delusionally try to apply ideals directly, but to downstep our relationship to ideals into an idea that matches with a specific set of temporal and spatial facts that are in front of us at the moment. And subsequently, when there's a different set of temporal and spatial facts in front of us, we have to do that again. You can't just apply the same downstepped ideal into an idea over and over again, especially the more that the environment is picking up pace around you once you've sailed out of the sheltered bays, okay? And you're out on the high seas and you're cruising with the Supreme, or starting to anyway, you've got to do that constantly. All right, so that, you know, think about how sweeping that is. Even unity is a downstepped, individuated phenomenon in Orvinton. You have the sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. One, you know, phase for each of the seven super universes. Okay, so the ceiling for those ideas in the mind, you know, the spiritual ceiling, is a downstepped expression. Okay, there's no, you know, directly being involved in the Isle of Paradise while you're in Orvinton. That relationship to paradise sparks you started. But that whole long process of consecrating your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother, yeah, those ideas of Orvinton, you've got to, you can't think about that as being some process of bringing yourself into an eternal existential relationship with paradise and now I'm done. Okay? You know, it's the ideals are just to get you going. The ideas is fundamentally what it's all about. Okay, that's why there is something besides the central universe, basically. Right? Why there's something besides the eternal. So that there's a way that ideas as downstepped expressions of ideals can come into existence. Otherwise, there's no place for them to exist. You know? Okay, so, you know, that's very much, you know, what's been revealed to us in the fifth epical revelation is the ideas of Orvinton, not the ideals of paradise. And that's what we're striving for. So it's going to take a philosophic accomplishment to achieve that, not just a religious accomplishment. Religion, you know, like on my little chart here, religion is a system of ideals. Okay, so that's a, you know, they never miss an opportunity to see if you're noticing something that is trying to remind you that what you're really trying to do with the fifth epical revelation is go beyond being started. Go beyond feeling being started, but to try to actually do something. You know, one must do something as well as be something, that line. from the Supreme Papers. Okay, so that's that. You know, that's a pretty fun little thing. And you know, see, and again, it's harmony. We're not striving for unity or individuality or associativity merely. We're striving for harmony. You know, and so you can start to think about that. If you know, you have a system of ideals and a system of ideas here. You have science and religion on the chart. I could start by bringing those together. How can I bring science and religion together within me? Not trying to somehow manipulate the world and bring science and religion together out there. You know, we're talking about in your inner life. Can you get a science and a religion in there and bring them together, harmonize them? All right, let's see what else they say.
Any of these beings may be voluntarily serving in Nebadon, and hence be technically outside our jurisdiction. But when functioning by assignment, such personalities of the super and central universes are not wholly exempt from the regulations of the local universe of their sojourn, though they continue to function as representatives of the higher universes and to work in accordance with the instructions which constitute their mission in our realm. The general headquarters Their general headquarters is situated in the Salvington sector of the Union of Days, and they operate in Nebadon subject to this over supervision of this ambassador of the Paradise Trinity. When serving in unattached groups, these personalities from the higher realms are usually self-directing, but when serving on request, they often voluntarily place themselves wholly under the jurisdiction of the supervising directors of the realms of assigned function.
Okay, now that's a great big long paragraph with all kinds of details there. Why are they, almost seemingly belaboring this point? We've seen this a lot. It doesn't matter that they're high beings. That they're most high assistants. There's very definitive order to everything, and beings are under orders in that order. And you're talking about this interesting interface between the higher levels of Trinity administration and the local universe, which has the dual administration of a Creator Son and a Creator Mother Spirit. And so they're giving you all those details about that there'll be times, right at the very end there will be times when they're going to be following orders in the local universe where those orders are not of a Trinity flavor. Obviously, we don't know exactly what that means, but they're somehow only of a dual flavor. It probably means they're much more circumscribed in time and space, much less holistic. Just do this, we'll let a trillion years roll by, and it'll all kind of work out. those sorts of orders where it's very much, just a more localized phenomenon. They are local universes. See, that's part of what's going on with a local universe, that you have this very definitive localization of administration. Along the lines of what I was just saying, in contrasting ideas and ideals, they're ordered to do something which is only applicable, only true there and then. And just is not the normal sort of thing that's much more universalizable that they might be doing under a totality attitude of the Paradise Trinity. So that's that, just to appreciate what's going on there. And, you know, we often, you know, they often mention this, that we have these sectors on worlds. You see, we have a Salvington sector, you know, these wedges, you know, on these worlds that we talk about at times when we're thinking about these worlds, that the Union of Days, as the Trinity representative, you know, is going to be the over supervisor here, as they're saying. you know, and of course, the more that they're just doing direct Trinity things, it's more of a supervisor. But, you know, if they're really dropping down, you know, then, you know, they'll say, is it okay for us to not do it in Trinity fashion? And he'll say, yeah, that's okay. Michael knows what he's doing. Well, it seems kind of strange to me. It's okay. It's okay. You can do what he says. You know, well, what about his lackeys? Yeah, even his lackeys. You follow them too. All right, so, you know, you kind of get the impression, see, you know, the way they stress that. They'll voluntarily place themselves wholly under the jurisdiction. Yeah. So in other words, sometimes it's dropping down pretty low. You know, and so there's a lot of condescension here for that being to come down and put themselves underneath, you know, such a lowly directorship. But it's everything is very, very rigid. We're reminded of that again. There's a cosmic system that we're all going to, you know, come into conformity with. All right, let's get some more here.
Most High assistants serve in local universe and in constellation capacities, but are not directly attached to the system or planetary governments. They may, however, function anywhere in the local universe and may be assigned to any phase of Nebadon activity, administrative, executive, educational, and others.
Okay, so there you kind of see the name coming out again. Okay, they serve in local universe and in constellation capacities, where the Most Highs are. All right, see. But are not directly attached to the system or planetary governments. Right, they're not going to put themselves underneath someone, you know, that could be going astray. Okay. However, you know, to the previous point, you know, there may be a very definitive, you know, integrous being at a fairly lowly level that they would put themselves under. Okay, but just in general, you know, they're not going to go in there and assume that a system or a planet is, you know, is something that you want to follow without any question. Okay. And then they're doing everything. You know, so, I mean, you know, we all know that when you read that list up front of perfectors of wisdom and divine counselors and universal censors and all this sort of stuff, you know, solitary messengers and whatnot. Well, we know those beings being assigned a task, you know, being involved in this revelation, right? So, you know, this is giving you a little, you know, window into the mechanism, you know, that happens through, you know. It's this group of beings that are designated Most High assistants and have gotten assigned to a local universe. And one of those things we just read, administrative, executive, educational. You know, the book that's sitting in your lap is an example of that, you know, educational mode. All right.
Most of this core is enlisted in assisting the Nebadon Paradise personalities, the Union of Days, the Creator Son, the Faithfuls of Days, the Magisterial Sons, and the Trinity Teacher Sons. Now and then, in the transaction of the affairs of a local creation, it becomes wise to withhold certain details, temporarily, from the knowledge of practically all of the native personalities of that local universe. Certain advanced plans and complex rulings are also better grasped and more fully understood by the more mature and far-seeing core of this high, of most high assistants. And it is in such situations and many others that they are so highly serviceable to the universe rulers and administrators.
You know, that's a pretty fun paragraph. Okay, so the kind of tension that we all know on our world, it's obviously on all other mortal worlds, about governments having secrets. Okay, you know, it's true on high. And, you know, and notice how humbly this is acknowledged, that there's certain things that are done that the local universe creatures would not understand, you know, and might even have a tendency to rebel against in their ignorance. So they remain ignorant. right, there's some things that they're just not told. Because, like I said, I mean, like, you know, he mentioned far-seeing, see, mature and far-seeing. See, so you're doing something, like I said, you've got this very localized phenomenon. So something is being done, you know, here and now that, you know, if it was fully disclosed, they go, what? How dare you? Or whatever, you know. You know, you're not going to do that. I have my rights or whatever. Okay. Right. You know, so they know that by, you know, most of the local universe personalities just wouldn't understand. They don't have a big enough picture to see the wisdom of doing that. Okay. And, you know, so it's very important that those local universe personalities are trained to be dutiful and just say, yes, sir. Now, and don't need to know why they're doing it. They just dutifully do what they're told to do and trust their superiors. And we know that because that's the way it has to be, and now we kind of see why, that's why, you know, it can be so problematic if one of their superiors goes astray. You know, because they've been very rigorously trained. You know, ours is not the question why, right? Right, they're very dutiful.
They call them gracious.
Yeah, yeah, right. And you see, they're counting on that that integrity and that graciousness. And but you know, it's you want to face that, you know, and appreciate that there's going to be some sort of a downstepped expression of that on every mortal world. That is appropriate. And one of the reasons why we feel so much tension with this is because of the Lucifer Rebellion. You know, there should have been 200,000 years of us being, you know, very graciously and wisely guided into trusting, you know, but, you know, instead we're very suspicious and we're very, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, and that, we always want to question authority. So, you know, they're trying to point out that you need to start trusting a bit and allowing some things to be going on your world that you don't fully understand. And it's not going to, that's not going to go away if eventually we have Machaventa show up one day and set up a planetary headquarters and all this sort of stuff. You know, it's not going to be full disclosure time. Okay? we're going to have to just trust. You know, especially, you know, when we really definitively know how many things are going on that we literally cannot see, they can't disclose. Now, back up into the, you know, amongst the celestials with this issue. You know, we touched upon this in passing when we were reading about the executioners. You know, the divine executioners. And remember, they mentioned that, you know, even for the revelator that was speaking of it there, there are times when they do things that apparently are wise. You know, you remember we were reading that, and they're, you know, so in other words, sometimes, you know, there's some very difficult things for local universe beings to understand that aren't behind the scenes, you know, they're right out in the open. Some really harsh things apparently and stuff happen, or are done, and they have to just trust that that's the best thing for the big picture.
Conciliating commission.
Right, the conciliating commission, you know, has rules, and the executioner, you know, calls on the master physical controllers and the spirit controllers, and, you know, really drastic things happen.
Cover your eyes, kid.
Okay, so, you know, it's, this is, you know, it's a very interesting thing that this sort of stuff is disclosed to us in the fifth epical revelation. Because we're this rebellion world, and because we trust so little, and because, you know, historically religion, all it's meant to mankind is a way to escape our fears of all these things we can't control and can't see and whatnot, you know, doing bad things to us. You know, so it's pretty grown up stuff, you know, to disclose these sorts of things to us, that, you know, it's you're way down in the trenches. Okay. You're not in Havona, and, sometimes you got to break a few eggs to make an omelet down here. Okay. So, you know, it's all the more reason that we should be reading this post fourth epical revelation, you know, in your inner life, okay? Firmly established within the citadel of your mind, you are a hold of the ideals of paradise, you know, and what, you know, Michael, as Jesus told us to do, to take firm hold of that and fear not, okay? Because if we're going to start to tell you more about the way things are down here, you're going to need to not fear. Because some of these things are scary for, you know, an immature being. And a divine executioner wielding controller beings is a, you know, has scary potentials, okay, to a fearful mind. Okay, you know, not to mention telling you that there's angels of trumpets and things like that, right? And most highs that rule in the kingdoms of men, and, you know, these sorts of things. Okay, so, you know, all the more reason that your faith is not just mere faith, that it's living faith, that it's founded on trust, okay? And it's, you know, inconcussable, it's unshakable. Nothing can break your grip on the truth that no real harm can befall you. Okay, you know, and if you can get it, if you can get above the fear, it should be actually quite reassuring that that most of our fears are unfounded. The universe is very rigidly controlled, structured. No real harm can befall it. You can feel secure. You can let yourself just melt in to that truth, and be part of the cosmos, and know that as long as you are, as long as you're, you know, doing your very best to do what is right, you don't have to worry that sometimes there might be those who aren't trying to do what is right might have to be dealt with, okay? But it, you won't blow up in the process of them being dealt with. Not really. Right. Actual harm may befall you, but not real harm. Worst thing that could happen is you could die, but that's going to happen anyway. Right. You know, you remember Andon and Fonta? You know, you live till you die unless a big rock falls on your head, right? Right. Yep. Things just happen. All right, let's see. I think that's, oh, just, yeah, there was that other, at the beginning there. You know, that, so they do give you that little bit at the beginning that most of this core is enlisted in assisting the Nebadon paradise personalities. Okay, so, you know, that kind of feeds back to what we were saying earlier. I mean, they're obviously not usually going way down in the trenches, you know, and putting themselves subservient to some very lowly situation. You know, most of the time it's these, you know, paradise origin beings that are in the local universe. Okay. All right. But obviously they, you know, they had to come into pretty direct relationships with some lowly beings called secondary midwayers in order to make the revelation happen. Okay, let's go on to the next group here. So this is kind of the contrasting group. You know, on the one hand, you have these beings from very high up coming down to the local universe, and on the other hand, you have these very kind of humble and essential lowly beings of the local universe that complement them.
Section 5, High Commissioners. The High Commissioners are spirit-fused ascendant mortals. They are not adjuster-fused. You quite well understand about the universe ascension career of a mortal candidate for adjuster fusion, that being the high destiny and prospect for all Urantia mortals since the bestowal of Christ Michael. But this is not the exclusive destiny of all mortals in the pre-bestowal ages of worlds like yours. And there is another type of world whose inhabitants are never permanently indwelt by thought adjusters. Such mortals are never permanently joined in union with a mystery monitor of paradise bestowal. Nevertheless, the adjusters do transiently indwell them, serving as guides and patterns for the duration of the life in the flesh. During this temporary sojourn, they foster the evolution of an immortal soul, just as in those beings with whom they hope to fuse. But when the mortal race is run, they take eternal leave of the creatures of temporary association.
Okay, so you have this little vignette about spirit-fused mortals here, because they have to contextualize what's going on here with the High Commissioners. And you know, like I was prefacing about the lowly, you know, what did I mean by the lowly? well, on the one hand, you might, you know, have worlds where that's all you have is spirit fusers, like they mentioned. Okay, like say a non-breather world. Okay, they're only spirit fusers. Okay. But the thing that's more immediately understandable to us is what, you know, they're pointing out in the early stages of a normal father-fuser world like ours, most of the beings are not father-fusers. They're spirit-fusers. Technically, you have, you know, a lot of spirit-fusers on our kind of world when you still have quote-unquote primitive humans, okay? When they're technically described as primitive prior to the arrival of the planetary prince. You know, those are primitive mortals. Okay. So, you know, we had this vast long span of time prior to the arrival of the planetary prince in this world. We had 500,000 years where we were in that primitive mode only. You know, well, how did that work? Well, remember, they tell you that Andon and Fanta, you know, God adjusters, and it wasn't just temporary. They, that adjuster came back to them when they were resurrected on the first mansion world, and they worked their way through the mansion worlds, and they did finally fuse when they got to Gerasim. Now, you notice they took them all the way to Gerasim to fuse, you know, rather than kind of the norm where it's like fifth mansion world or something like that. Okay, and they mentioned their firstborn did too, and some of the immediates, but by and large, their descendants, you know, were just spirit fusers, if anything. Now, on this world, the tricky thing was all that backmating that happened, right? The way it's supposed to work, the reason that, you know, our very first two mortals, Ann and Infanta, were father fusers at the very beginning of the primitive times, because a world is supposed to get initiated like that, where the first parents have adjusters, so their children get adjusters at roughly age 6, or, you know, or whenever it is at that primitive stage, you know, when they're young. You know, that they get them because their parents have them, or at least one of their parents has them, has an adjuster. And so that, you know, all of the descendants of that, you know, those early mortals, see, you know, are supposed to perpetuate spiritual lines like that. Okay. On this world, that didn't happen. I mean, even, you know, where the lines you're perpetuating are going to be spirit fusers, you know, but they get an adjuster anyway. But you start with a pair that are actually going to be father fusers. They very definitively get an adjuster, and they're supposed to start this perpetuation where, you know, by and large, everyone gets an adjuster, okay, because their parents have adjusters. Okay, but then you have all this backmating, you know, now obviously if it backmated so far that they were no longer human, okay, then adjusters aren't even in play anymore. But, you know, you can imagine that this probably seriously disrupted this, you know. And so, you know, as they're pointing out here, you know, you go prior to Pentecost, you know, and there were all kinds of lines, lineages on this planet that weren't spiritual lineages. You know, children weren't automatically getting adjusters. And we didn't get the biologic uplift and blending and all that. So we had very primitive people on top of that. You know? So primitive and the backmating and breaking these lines and, okay, you know, all of that came to an end with Pentecost. Okay. But anyway, back to the High Commissioners. And just that fact that, you know, a lot of these High Commissioners, they're starting as very primitive mortals. Okay? You know, they're very much the little children of the local universe. Okay? And they end up staying here in the local universe. Okay? Within the womb of Mom, the creative mother spirit.
Until light and life?
At
some juncture, maybe.
When the grand universe is settled in light and life, you know, things will change. But for the time being, they're here. We'll get a little bit more here. But you know, so just think of the contrast, see? I mean, it's basically the lowliest will creatures, you know, that can... that you can have and have be part of eternity, in contrast to these very high beings that we were just reading about that are coming down from way above. Like I said, see, it's very much a meeting of the highest and the lowest, you know, that you have juxtaposed there. Let's see, anything else in there that I need to speak to? Now let's read some more. Oh yeah, like I said, like a non-breather world, for instance. See, those are all spirit fusers, but there's, you know, they hint at, you know, that there's all other worlds where, I mean, remember, there's even whole local universes where a huge percentage of the worlds are just spirit fusers instead of father fusers. Okay, so those local universes obviously would have a lot more individuals feeding into, you know, these sort of duties than we do.
Surviving souls of this order attain immortality by eternal fusion with an individualized fragment of the spirit of the local universe mother spirit. They are not a numerous group, at least not in Nebadon. On the mansion worlds, you will meet and fraternize with these spirit-fused mortals as they ascend the paradise path with you as far as Salvington, where they stop. Some of them may subsequently ascend to higher universe levels, but the majority will forever remain in the service of the local universe. As a class, they are not destined to attain paradise.
Now, obviously, see, like I said, by forever, even the revelators can't project forever beyond the grand universe being settled in light life. I mean, you know, what happens after that? No one knows. Okay, but you know, for this age, they're here. Right. So you have that, you know, that fragment of the creative mother spirit that they're fused with. You know, so they're resurrected and they're fused with that. Okay. You know, and it's so it's a, you know, very much a you know, just a fact that that happens right away is showing you they aren't in this long-term individualized mode. They're much more part of this collective phenomenon of the local universe. You know, and they're sort of just immediately being gathered up, and just takes a little bit of ascending and training, you know, and they're going to be part of the mother's hands in the local universe. Okay, and those worlds that, you know that they're spirit fusers, you know, you just think about how, what a different perspective they would have, you know, about their life on their, in their mortal world. I mean, they, you know, they don't have their sights set to paradise. They see themselves very much as, you know, they would see themselves very much as part of this local universe and, you know, kind of its local federation of planets, you know, if you will.
But they'd have a... They'd have an inherent integrity of the whole within the local universe.
Yeah, and we're going to read about that, you know, just how that's what they, you know, that's the important thing about them, is embodying that like no other. Mm-hmm. Let's see, anything else in there? Let's see. You have to, you know, where they stop. You know, so,
pretty abrupt.
Pretty abrupt, yes. Yeah, but you know, it's obvious why they did that. They want you to deal with that, you know, and not look down your nose at them, right? Yeah, because we all know that we've talked about that. There's going to be a tendency for you know us mortals reading this book to start to get a little bit. Well, I'm an Agendaunter, and I'm you know, and all this sort of stuff, you know. Yeah, you got to be careful about that thought. Let's see. Yeah, okay, so let's get some more here.
Not being adjust or fused, they never become finaliters, but they do eventually become enrolled in the local universe core of perfection. They have in spirit obeyed the Father's command, be you perfect.
Okay, see, so that, see, now that really puts a point on this, that they have literally reached a perfection point. Okay, this is not a core of quote unquote perfection. Okay, this is a core of perfection. So there's a downstepped expression of perfection at the top of a local universe level. You get all the way to the ceiling of a local universe, like these beings. You get to the local universe headquarters, and you have you know fully achieved that downstepped expression of perfection. You're as perfect as you can get. See, so that too, you know, is telling you something about those, you know, the difference of how those spirit fusers are designed or how they are at that point in their in evolution. If it's a father fuser world, but they're still primitive, you know, that they're, you know, it's inherent in them that they can't ascend higher than the local universe headquarters. They can't perfect at any higher level than that. And on the one hand, you think, wow, they are lowly, but they're in their, you know, sphere, they're just as perfect at that point as you're going to be when you're on the Isle of Paradise. They're still perfect. You know, so that's a huge challenge from the history of people thinking about perfect and perfection and stuff like that, you know, to think of perfection in such hierarchical terms. Right?
Now, once they're fused with the Mother Spirit, Spirit. Right. At that point, they are sophistry proof.
Right, so, you know, they're going to have this integrity, right, see, too. Yeah.
They are sophistry proof at that point.
Yeah, right, I mean, obviously, if you fuse with something, yeah, right, right, yeah. Yeah, so you know, we'll see them hinting at it in just a little bit. You know, you should be already thinking. It's like, well, wait a minute. You know, we've been talking a lot about, you know, us ascending to perfection on paradise, and then we have the second phase of our, you know, finite careers, where we penetrate to completion. Oh, I bet there's a second phase here too. Right. Well, that's what the next paragraph starts with, right?
After attaining the Nebadon core of perfection, spirit-fused ascenders may accept assignment as universe aides, this being one of the avenues of continuing experiential growth which is open to them. Thus do they become candidates for commissions to the high service of interpreting the viewpoints of the evolving creatures of the material worlds to the celestial authorities of the local universe.
Obviously, there's unrevealed avenues, you know, probably related to the other six schemes and all that sort of stuff. But there is this avenue. Okay, and now they're going to talk about this quite a bit, but it's just, you know, let's think about how they started us out here. Thus do they become here. That sentence. Okay, here again. You know, this is a big challenge relative to the history of people thinking about heaven, okay, or celestial beings. Okay, so you literally need one-time mortals to be very actively and constantly educating their superiors about the facts, okay? You know, we're used to thinking of, you know, I mean, even if you aren't just putting everything in one perfect God's hands and God does everything, you know, if there's other beings in your worldview in the heavens, you know, you don't think of them as needing to be, you know, informed by underlings about the details. You know, you think of them, you know, they're omniscient, you know, they know everything. No. Pointing out everyone is very circumscribed and it only works in a system, you know, and especially since there's a vertical dimension to that cosmic system, you got a lot of beings with very vast duties that don't know anything directly about those lower levels. And if someone doesn't tell them, their decisions will be completely unwise and false. Okay, so now let's see, you know, where this goes in this particular instance. You know, that you've got these interpreters. It's like, well, this is the way lower beings see things. And they're going, really? Wow. Okay. But they're here interpreting for their superiors. You know?
The High Commissioners begin their service on the planets as race commissioners. In this capacity, they interpret the viewpoints and portray the needs of the various human races. They are supremely devoted to the welfare of the mortal races whose spokesmen they are, even ever seeking to obtain for them mercy, justice, and fair treatment in all relationships with other peoples. Race commissioners function in an endless series of planetary crises and serve as the articulate expression of whole groups of struggling mortals.
Okay, that paragraph now should just, like, you know, have an old worldview just spinning, okay?
Isn't that stereotypical?
Okay, I mean, this is just, like, you know, huge, okay, and its ramifications. All right, now remember I mentioned when we were back in at the end of the Life Carrier paper that we were going to be coming on the race commissioners. And we were wondering why the Most High Observer authored that paper, and it's like, well, it's because that's the boss of the Life Carriers. He's also he also oversees the race commissioners. I mentioned, see, so here they are. So you've got these spirit-fused mortals who have are part of the Nebadon Corps of Perfection, and they're beginning their process of maturing past that perfection point. They're serving as race commissioners. And so the first thing they say is seeking to obtain for them mercy, justice, and fair treatment. Okay, that seems to be harkening back to what we were naturally talking about not too long ago here. Trumpets blasting and, right. See, they're telling you that there are high beings that are looking at the big picture saying, well, I think maybe we need a giant eraser. Okay, and the race commissioners are jumping in and saying, no. Okay, I mean, let me try to interpret to you for the potentials I see in this race of beings. I don't think you should wipe them out. I think they still, have potential. That's a very interesting thing. To have that kind of an interaction going on high. Like I said, are you fearful? This is not going to assuage your fears. Okay, when you learn that there's this sort of, you've got this advocate, and you're hoping this advocate, gets you out of a life sentence. Okay, or a death sentence.
This advocate.
Sentence. Right, but the very fact that the person who's going to give an order doesn't just know this stuff themselves. It has to be taught by the lowliest beings who have worked their way up. But of course, see, they know of that which they speak. They're the only beings that know the bottom of the trench. Okay? The higher beings don't. So they're indispensable to the picture. And then they just, make it even worse. Race commissioners function in an endless series of planetary crises. So are you going to go to sleep tonight, knowing you live on a planet where there's an endless series of crises?
Yeah.
All I have to do is turn the television.
Most of which you can't see, but are worse than anything you can see.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Like I said, these sorts of statements, are going to really require you to be firm in where you have your feet planted in the cosmos. Okay, they're disclosing some pretty rugged truths here. The things are very sloshy down at the bottom of this whole picture, and it gets really messy at times. And there's an endless series of, forget about worlds that have rebellion and stuff, so that they, definitively are going to have a Most High observer on them. I mean, the Most Highs are going to have to be, those observers are going to have to be assuming regencies, all the time, and speaking with absolute, unquestionable authority, and you can't appeal to a higher voice or anything like that, okay, and all these sorts of things, but isn't it interesting that, you've got these individuals, you can imagine, especially if you're dealing with the three secondary sangic races, these race commissioners. They tell you that, a lot of times they don't make it very long in the history of a world. That they're often get the short stick in all the endless wars and whatnot on a world. But the race commissioners see would be advocating. So that if that race did go away on that world, perfect assessment was made of the situation and nothing of of value to the whole was lost in them going extinct.
It's an advocate is focusing on one aspect of the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And Are they trying, well, I guess a good advocate wouldn't be trying to elevate them above the whole, but a good advocate
make sure that nothing was hidden about them.
Would say right. that they're instrumental to the whole. They're
right, just pointing out, you know, this is the, you know, this race on this world has this, you know, very definitive quality that you might not be familiar with. You may not have seen that on other worlds, you know, but these sorts of things, you know, they've gone through this experience. You know, they would be just making sure that all the facts are visible to those on high, who then, you know, take all these different advocated facts and synthesize them, you know, and make a final decision. But these beings are not, you know, they're like you say, they're very focused on just their one thing, one part. You know, so it's important, you know, because they're so part focused like that, that they be perfect. But they're heading towards a more holistic consciousness of completion by all this experience. You know, but they're going to get it by being by summing up all the parts. They're going to get a very definitive relationship with this part and this part and this part and this part. And it's going to eventuate into a relationship with the whole of Nebadon, say, in our case. Yeah. But, you know, their superiors are going to, you know, consider everything in the whole and make the final holistic decisions. And they're not going to be directly concerned with that. They'll just perfectly illuminate that part, shine a light on that part. You know, the race, you know, when they bring up race commissioners, that's, you know, that certainly highlights, you know, what in many ways is so politically incorrect about mentioning race at all in the fifth epical revelation. You know, whenever they bring them up, you know, you're really reminded, no, races are very definitive. And even see, you know, with race commissioners on this world, it's like, well, we don't have any pure races, you know, anymore, they tell us, basically. Like, yeah, but see, they know where all the orange man blood is, and they know its potentials, okay, and they're advocating for that, for instance. You know, there's probably all kinds of subdivisions of this too and whatnot, but they also would be focused on just those pure initial elements too, as they still are conserved in the races, you know, and making sure that, you know, they're not just advocating for this blend of Sanghiks, you know, but also for the fundamental elements of Sanghik nature.
Yeah, because of the loss of so much of the orange race, we have a paucity of loyalty. I mean, as an employer,
yeah.
I experience this.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And that's one reason why the Hispanics that work for me, it's when they have a small amount of that orange,
mm-hmm.
they have more loyalty, and it's
noticeable.
It's noticeable.
Yes.
Yeah, you can count on it.
Yeah.
You can, and I respect it.
Yeah.
Another question: if your race is erased, do you stay that way, and do you sleep forever?
Well, again, see, you know, we're dealing with group issues, not individual issues here. I mean, even if a whole race is exterminated by those on high, I mean, the individuals, that's a separate matter. I mean, they have souls, they survive. But obviously, you know, it's kind of an interesting issue to think about. If you literally have subhuman strains on a world, you know, go, do you suppose, you know, if that's really problematic and can't sort of evolve out of the system naturally, wouldn't that be kind of an easy decision to make? They're not human in the first place. If they're really problematic on a world, maybe at some point, you know, the divine executioners just tell the master physical controllers to make them disappear. I don't know. Yeah, there's all kinds of thoughts like that.
Well,
you know,
it's expressed that which cannot be coordinated must be destroyed.
Right, right. Yeah. Right. You know, and if evolution doesn't do it, okay, then a hand is going to step in and do it. I mean, there's just no way that you can have anywhere near light and life if you have vast, numbers of not even socializable, humans on the planet, let alone not humans at all. You can't have limited mindal character of any significance on a world to even get close to light and life, right? Like we've been trying to wrap our minds around, we can't even comprehend what light and life is. We're so primitive. It's completely beyond our wildest imaginations. We have that limited a relationship to ideals that we can't even imagine something post bestowal sun on a normal world. So this, when we have thoughts of absolutizing our relationship to ideals, how ridiculous is that? How far removed from the actual absoluteness of those ideals, the Isle of Paradise, is our recognition of those ideals?
We recognize that we recognize that. That's what I
recognize. So, there's a lot, just all kinds of humbling lessons, as you contemplate all this. Okay, so sure, amazingly, we have these very definitive advocates who, not just looking for justice and fair treatment, which we often have advocates for, but mercy. Mercy for the race. It's like, isn't there just like endless mercy? Well, yes, but all right, there's facts too. All right, so what else do they tell us here?
After long experience in problem solving on the inhabited worlds, these race commissioners are advanced to the higher levels of function, eventually attaining the status of high commissioners of and in the local universe. The last registration recorded slightly over 1.5 billion of these high commissioners in Nebadon. These beings are not finaliters, but they are ascendant beings of long experience and of great service to their native realm.
So, yes, we're a young local universe, so that's part of that, the smallness of that number. But, also, after a long experience, okay? So this process of penetrating to completion, getting up to these, levels where you're inducted into the Nebadon Core of Completion and those sorts of things, like we'll read about in few papers here. It's most likely a very long process. So you wouldn't expect, a very huge number, and sure enough, it isn't very huge, for both those reasons.
But still, we don't have anywhere near the 10 million planets that we're going to have either.
Right, like I said, it's a very, it's a relatively young local universe, so there's always all these issues. And, that span of having primitive mortals, is usually relatively not that long, like on ours where it's 500,000 years, and you could have a lot of mortals generated and fed into the mansion world from that. And then they mentioned, we don't have a lot of spirit fusing worlds, where that's all they are in this local universe either. So all that plays together where you have a pretty elite core here, when you start talking about numbers of mortals and all these worlds of only 1.5 billion. All right, let's see. With that long experience and great service, there's no one that, that embodies all of the, the potential that can be actualized by staying in a local universe like them. I mean, we're just, relative to our whole eternal career, we're just zip out of the local universe, we're not going to, snowball, roll up very much at all of the local universe, and we'll be gone. They roll around and roll around and roll around and just, you know, acquire a relationship with every little detail, you know. And they take all of that up to supremacy, you know, like no other being can.
Really indispensable.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, you can only imagine how important they would be when a grand universe gets settled in light and life, you know, that they really are the embodiment of the wholeness of it in so many ways. Yep. All right.
We invariably find these commissioners in all the tribunals of justice, from the lowest to the highest. Not that they participate in the proceedings of justice, but they do act as friends of the court, advising the presiding magistrates, respecting the antecedents, environment, and inherent nature of those concerned in the adjudication.
So again, just stressing that point, lowest to the highest. You have amicus briefs, okay, friends of the court. So even those very high magistrates, you know, need to be educated. So you have to put a lot of trust in this whole system. You don't just have one magical being on high and really trust is not needed. You notice, see the contrast. See, that's the thing. I mean, they're trying to get us to actually make that step from mere faith to trust. You know, as long as you have a belief in a magical, you know, all-seeing, all-doing, you know, everything God, trust is not required. You know, what do you need trust for? And that's why everyone is so immature on this planet, you know, in their religious consciousness. They just have this little faint flicker of faith that they were born with, and none of them have matured it into trust, because basically everyone just has a magical notion of reality, which doesn't require trust. No, the real reality requires nothing but trust. Everywhere you turn, it's like, oh my goodness, I got to trust this too, and this, and this, and this. It's like nothing is just innately, you know, magically there. This vast, elaborate system has to all be properly linked together and talking to each other properly and everything, or it won't work.
Justified.
You know, one little break in a node of the communication network, and there's ignorance. Right? So it goes in the universe and of course we're again reminded, as we've been so many times, that even at the highest levels you need tribunals. You know, this is another thing that's just so not in prior worldviews, you know, that you go up to some really, you know, even if you had some vertical notion, like, you know, levels of heaven or something like that, you know, who has ever thought that, you know, you go way up in that hierarchy, you know, and there's disputes that have to be taken to court, and, you know, I mean, no one has ever thought like that.
Summons on
salary. Yes, right, so you've been summoned, you know, by the Ancients of Days. Ah! I mean, the capital J judges?
Where's my fret valve?
Yes. Let's see, where were we? I lost our... Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, go ahead.
High commissioners are attached to the various messenger hosts of space and always to the ministering spirits of time. They're encountered on the programs of various universe assemblies. And these same mortal-wise commissioners are always attached to the missions of the sons of God to the worlds of space.
Yes, you know, I don't know. I think this may be the only spot that's disclosed, you know. That, you know, these guys are behind the scenes a lot. And, you know, we haven't appreciated that, I don't think, very well. These mortal-wise commissioners. So that, you know, they were there, you know, they came with Caligastian crew and came with Adam and Eve and crew. And, they didn't join the rebellion, right, because they're integrous. So that's, you know, I mean, I don't, can anyone remember them being mentioned in relationship to Michael? You know, seventh pistol, I don't recall it being mentioned. So, you know, that's kind of just a fascinating thing to think about. What did that have to do with the seventh pistol? But of course, on this world, you know, like we mentioned, you know, it's all under the oversight of the Most High Observer, all the, you know, them being here. But still, you know, it starts to get you thinking about some of those mysterious meetings that Michael had at times and stuff, you know, and what was he up to and these sorts of things, you know.
I mean, his strolls, yeah, at the mountains.
Well, you know, he'd, you know, you know, even when he was doing the Marantxa appearances, you know, there would be those times when he was doing other things and, you know, wasn't immediately related to his apostles and disciples and, you know, that sort of stuff.
As mortals of this universe, they're always visible then to all non-mortals.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, they would see be visible. I mean, for instance, when things are upgraded and we get this planet's closer to light and life, you know, and the mortals here are more like material sons and daughters, you know, they'll be visible. You know, so Adam and Eve could see them. Adam and Eve could see the race commissioners.
The midwares and everyone.
Yeah,
else.
Right. Yeah, here. Yeah. Because like they tell you, you know, you don't burn your bridges. You know, you maintain that relationship to your lowly origin and continue to
just get better software.
Yeah, you just add on top of that, you know. So, you know, obviously they're gonna, you know, they're gonna be huge, and you know, in an Adam and Eve on any world, you know, working on blending the races and all that sort of stuff. I mean, the race commissioners, they're gonna be, Adam and Eve are gonna be constantly sending them out and getting information, you know, through these race commissioners. That's gonna.
Can you imagine the clamor they must have had when Eve was trying to move things along?
No! all my advocacy for my race has now become very problematic. Yes. Yeah. What was that? Something about an endless series of planetary crises. And they have all kinds of experience, like, okay, plan Z cubed. Oh. All right.
Whenever fairness and justice require an understanding of how a contemplated policy or procedure would affect the evolutionary races of time, these commissioners are at hand to present their recommendations. They are always present to speak for those who cannot be present to speak for themselves.
Yeah. Again, you just, you know, you notice they kind of repeat it several times, make sure it sinks in. So those on high have a contemplated policy. That's not ominous or anything. Contemplated policy or procedure. I wonder how that's going to affect the evolutionary races. Right. I mean, it just, you know, it sounds, it has such sweeping sound to it. I mean, it's more than just the Most High Observer, you know, making a decision that's, you know, what's best for the most people, you know, the greatest length of time, and, you know, so it's not going to go so well for a small number of people for a short period of time. It's like, well, here when you read about this, it's like, this doesn't sound like small numbers of people. Right. I mean, it's just so, right. It's a lot of sweeping sound of what's going on here. See,
like a lot of genetics to me.
Right, all these genetic issues. See that, you know, and all this stuff that one day we'll understand. But it's, you notice, you know, at this point, you kind of, now that we've kind of unpacked this a little bit, you go back to the previous section and that whole bit about needing those most high assistants. So that there's things can be communicated and decisions are making themselves, you know, above the level of all those that would go, what, huh? right, you know, kind of getting the sense that there are all these very gritty things that go on, and sometimes it's best for a lot of those details to just not be publicly known. So, interesting.
The worlds of the spirit-fused mortals. The eighth group of seven primary worlds and tributary satellites in the Salvington Circuit are the exclusive possession of the spirit-fused mortals of Nebadon. Ascending, adjuster-fused mortals are not concerned with these worlds except to enjoy many pleasant and profitable sojourns as the invited guests of the spirit-fused residents.
To the profitable part, you know, you could interact with them and you know, get a sense of the local universe before you head out. You know, you're at the doorstep of leaving here. Those who really know what you're about to leave behind.
You know, they remind me of the penultimate state park tour guide.
Technically, you mean ultimate, not just next to ultimate, but actually the ultimate tour guide. Right. You see, there's just no one that knows the local universe like the back of their hand, like these beings. This whole bit about Melchizedek University. Remember what that's technically what all these worlds are. So apparently it's, not so formal education sort of university going on here, but more just, engaging them. I mean, this is just their home, and you're invited into their home and interact with them, and learn, just learn interacting with them. But it doesn't sound like, there's sort of schools there, and blah, 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 so much, because the way they word that, how do they say that? They're the exclusive possession of the spirit-fused mortals, right? Much more of a just an interpersonal education there. All right.
Except for those few who attain Uversa and Paradise, these worlds are the permanent residence of the spirit-fused survivors. Such designed limitation of mortal ascent reacts to the good of the local universes by ensuring the retention of a permanent evolved population whose augmenting experience will continue to enhance the future stabilization and diversification of the local universe administration. These beings may not attain paradise, but they achieve an experiential wisdom in the mastery of Nebadon problems that utterly surpasses anything attained by the transient ascenders. And these surviving souls continue as unique combinations of the human and the divine, being increasingly able to unite the viewpoints of these two widely separate levels and to present such a dual viewpoint with ever heightening wisdom.
Yeah, so there you see it. You say, I'm going to paradise. Yeah, you transient descender.
Okay, we call you guys transient.
Yeah, a little.
Don't lose your papers.
you homeless vagabond.
Yes. Right.
No, here. It's very interesting, except for those few who apparently attain.
Right. So,
and paradise.
Remember, there's always these exceptions, with the angels and whatnot. That, there's always some that get called up to a higher notch, and so then they'll get modified. I mean, it's like in this case. I mean, they would have to be modified by the Creative Mother Spirit to be plugged into her, the next level of mind. It's not that they're not allowed to go out of the boundary. If they went out of the boundaries of the local universe in Nebadon, they'd come unplugged. Yeah. Right? It doesn't matter how many trillions of years they've been living here. Right? and so there's that, yeah.
I was just talking about what this revelation, how they were asked, what their feelings were about disclosing this kind of information to such a primitive world. How it would affect all the races.
Yeah, good thought. I mean, that's a huge issue. You have so many so many people on this planet that kind of have a tentative grip on reality, you know, simply because they're pretty limited genetically and stuff, you know. You know, so, you know, yeah, they have an adjuster by grace now, you know, but they're technically a being that, you know, would have been zero probability that they would have gotten an adjuster in this, you know, and gone on from this life. And now they do by grace.
Don't worry, they won't read it.
Right, you know, but there are those issues of,
I'm saying, you know, presenting this to those people.
Yeah.
And as Chris keeps saying, you know, there's some rugged truths in here that for someone, people like us, they salve any kind of fear or doubt that we ever had these truths.
Mm-hmm.
But to the masses, I think they would rather play football, watch football, and have an escapist magic. Mm-hmm. Magical thinking rather than to confront these truths. And so I thought it was pretty brave of them to give this to the planet. And I wonder what went through their minds as they said, what kind of.
Yeah. No, I mean, and just, yeah, I mean, I just, you know, just to emphasize that point. Obviously, the race commissioners would have been consulted, you know, about, because there is going to be some interface. I mean, obviously, there's going to be a whole bunch of people that won't even ever be aware of its existence, you know. But there's some boundary region that's going to cause chaos, you know, by dropping this big rock into the pond, you know. And, right, so that all these people would have chimed in on what they saw the ramifications, you know, were for, you know, the faint flicker of faith that some, you know, group of mortals have been, you know, been nursing along for centuries, you know. Is this just going to blow their whole religious concept out of the water, or, you know, what's going to happen? All right, and then just one other thing before we go on to the next section. You notice they stressed it about these spirit-fused mortals. And I'll stress it again, even if it's in an evolutionary sense, that they're just basically spirit fusers because they're primitive. Such designed limitation. Yeah, we just read the life carrier paper. Okay, so primitive mortals are designed, you know, to be spirit fusers. It isn't just that they can't be father fusers. It's part of the process. You have to design, you know, so when they put that single-celled plant, you know, in those shallow seas, it's got to be designed so that initially you have something that can be a spirit fuser, you know, and then it eventually evolves into a father fuser, and that's all part of this design, okay? And then on those worlds that don't have father fusers at all, the life carriers are designing them like that for the whole life of the world, you know? So, you know, you have a world that's in the seventh stage of light and life, and they're spear fusers.
Well, that's comforting. I'm limited by design.
It's not the devil that made you do it. It's the life carriers that made you do it. So just, you know, carry around a little picture of them and just point at it. Don't look at me. I mean,
limited by design.
Oh. All right, let's do some celestial overseers here.
Section 6, celestial overseers. The Nebadon educational system is jointly administered by the Trinity Teacher Sons and the Melchizedek Teaching Corps. But much of the work designed to effect its maintenance and upbuilding is carried on by the celestial overseers. These beings are a recruited core of embracing all types of individuals connected with the scheme of educating and training the ascending mortals. There are upward of 3 million of them in Nebadon, and they are all volunteers who have qualified by experience to serve as educational advisors to the entire realm. From their headquarters on the Selvington worlds of the Melchizedeks, these overseers range the local universe as inspectors of the Nebadon School technique designed to affect the mind training and the spirit education of the ascending creatures.
Okay, so upward of 3 million, pretty small relative number, but yeah, they're overseers, okay? So you don't need vast numbers of them. They range around as inspectors, they're saying. And you notice how they purposely use different terms here. Mind training and spirit education. Okay, so spirit education, but with the mind part, they specifically, instead of saying education, they said training. Lines. A train is a line, right? Stay between the lines. You're going to be trained. You know, we've stressed this, that there's this very definitive order in the universe. It has very definitive lines in it, and you have to figure out where those lines are and how to drive between them. So they purposely did that, using the word training to emphasize, the definitive linearness of it. You know, I want you all to go in this line. Yes, sir. Okay, and you're pulled, you know, like a train. You're pulled along that line. All right. Well, let's see what else they say about them.
The training of mind and education of spirit is carried on from the worlds of human origin up through the system mansion worlds and the other spheres of progress associated with Gerasim. And the 70 socializing realms attached to Edentia, and on the 490 spheres of spirit progress encircling Salvington. On the universe headquarters itself are numerous Melchizedek schools, the colleges of the universe sons, the seraphic universities, and the schools of the teacher sons, and the union of days. Every possible provision is made to qualify the various personalities of the universe for advancing service and improving function. The entire universe is one vast school.
Yep, so there's that sentence that a number of people have heard. The entire universe is one vast school. Oh, I was kind of wondering about the celestial overseers. I got the overseers part right away, but celestial seemed so vague. I mean, isn't that like everything? Yeah, the entire universe is one vast school. So see, they purposely construct, chose that name. Once you get that, the reminder that the entire universe is one vast school. They're not, some sort of localized overseers. They're celestial overseers, okay? And they said these overseers range the local universe. See, again. So that's the idea of the construct of their name, even though it sounds kind of vague. They're trying to just pick a couple words that embody the basics there. You wondered maybe why I was so stressing the training and education thing. I mean, yeah, literally. They start the next sentence. This training of mind and education of spirit. Did I mention training of mind? That this consecration of your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother is not some vast flinging of your mind into a fuzziness, right? It's very, very precise, delineated structure that you're trying to get come into a relationship with. If you don't have individuality consciousness, you're not going to get anywhere with this process. Yeah.
So they're consulting with those that can see your particular personality pattern, so that they can help you, guide you through where you need to go specially.
Right, so you see that they're the mechanism, these celestial overseers are the mechanism for making sure that the whole local universe benefits from what's learned in various places, about how better to handle certain specific, types of selves, and you know, and certain circumstances. I mean, that's why, you know, the fact that there's this rebellion in our local system, that's, you know, it's so intriguing to everyone, and there's all this special education related to that, because, you know, there's so much that has been learned about how best to do things in the wake of that, that the rest of the local universe can benefit from. You know, and so everyone, you know, even outside of the local universe wants to, you know, get pointers on how best to oversee things and, you know, encourage the most effective growth of all the individuals. Yeah.
You know, you're constant stressing to us to be very aware of the language and the words that are used and all such. And,
mm-hmm.
Well, of course, I run over my head. Celestial overseers, I immediately assumed that they were taken from the ranks of the angels. You know, celestial beings that I've always known. I've never taken the word apart.
Mm-hmm.
So it made perfect sense to me. It has nothing to do with angels, apparently. These are specific beings that are...
We'll get to that in just a second here. But just the fact that they set, you know, use such a sweeping adjective of you know, celestial, it's like, well, okay, I know the celestial sphere, that's like the whole, that's like the whole heavens. Yeah, I mean, like I pointed out, when you go out and look at that dome of the heavens, that celestial sphere, basically everything you're seeing there is the local universe. I mean, set the Milky Way aside, you know. But all those, you know, you can't really see with the naked eye beyond local universe range of stars, you know. So the celestial overseers are the local universe, you know, overseers, because that's, yeah. So, you know, they're using it, see, in that even more specific sense. You know, that, you know, just the fact that we call it the celestial sphere, or we think of the word celestial as being tied to what we see, you know, in that dome above the earth of the stars.
Yeah. I wanted to comment on the training of the mind.
Yeah.
You know, I do, like a lot of readers do, I do a lot of listening to the Urantia book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I've really been noticing just how crazy and uncontrollable the mind is.
Mm-hmm.
You sit down to listen, and then you realize that you've missed.
Yeah, you go squirreling off. Yeah.
In a thousand directions, you bring your mind back to listen some more, and before you know it, it's gone again.
See.
And that's the kind of training that I'm thinking might be taking place.
Exactly. See, that's why I said that's why they use that word training,
yeah.
So that there's lines.
But it's focusing on something.
Right.
Being
able to follow a line and not go, what about that butterfly over there? Right? Right. Being able to hold a line. Yep. See, so, yeah, see, that's why I was stressing that. See, you just, they're, you know, they're trying to make you appreciate what we're talking about. How that's contrasted with just, I want to, you know, education of spirit. I want to open up my relationship to a vaster tract of unity. Okay, that's one thing. What about the lines? What about your individuality consciousness? Okay, that's a separate issue.
I was just thinking about, you were talking about the celestial overseers and how other universes are sending people in to look at our universe and mm-hmm. our system problems and how it was being handled. And how, thinking about how the creator sons of adjacent local universes are empowering their creatures to learn from this, saying, go learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to tell you how, you go learn.
Yeah, yeah.
And just how.
Especially since there's a whole bunch of things that can only be learned in the wake of a rebellion.
Right.
So coincidentally, rebellions happen.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. All right, let's get some more here.
The methods employed in many of the higher schools are beyond the human concept of the art of teaching truth. But this is the keynote of the whole educational system. Character acquired by enlightened experience. The teachers provide the enlightenment. The universe station and the ascender status afford the opportunity for experience. The wise utilization of these two augments character.
Right, and there's certain things can only be learned in certain stations and at certain levels of status and all those things. So, yeah, everyone is trying to make sure that all those potentials get actualized in every nook and cranny of station and status and enlightenment potential. Okay.
Fundamentally, the Nebadon educational system provides for your assignment to a task and then affords you opportunity to receive instruction as to the ideal and divine method of best performing that task. You are given a definite task to perform, and at the same time you are provided with teachers who are qualified to instruct you in the best method of executing your assignment. The divine plan of education provides for the intimate association of work and instruction. We teach you how best to execute the things we command you to do.
Okay, so that last sentence, he puts it all together. I suspect, since we've talked about this a lot, you can maybe feel it was building up to that. See, so there's the bottom line, okay? What we command you to do, okay? So gone are all the delusions of self-assertion in the heavens, right? No, you're going to be commanded, and there is the best way to do it, period. And that's the way it needs to be done. Okay?
Yeah, but.
Yeah, but isn't it good enough for government work? And isn't the universe one vast government too? Right. Right. See, so this is, we felt attention to this all the time. You know, so that's a little reminder. You juxtapose that closing sentence with that one. The entire universe is one vast school. Guess what? The entire universe of universes is one vast school,
yeah.
Including the central universe and paradise and everything else. There's no escaping.
Okay,
and so for here to eternity, it's about the best way to execute the things you're commanded to do. Okay, you know, and to somehow not think of that in some animal origin, simplistic, champing at the bit sort of way, fighting against that. You know, it's going to be the most glorious delight you could imagine to have some very important, definitive thing to do. You know, as they say, you are given a definite task to perform, you know? To have this very definitive task, and you're going to do it the best way that can be done. It's going to be so gratifying, that experience after that. To do this really complicated, high-level thing and to do it spot on,
I was just reading in a management text, and they were talking about different kinds of motivation. There's a simple one, pay, but then people tend to be even more motivated by other things, and one of the things they pointed out was just this.
Right.
If you can give someone a task that they can have a fair amount of independence and they can accomplish it and they can, just what you're saying, that they, it gets them real motivated.
Yeah, you notice the way they started out, the educational system provides for your assignment to a task, and then affords you opportunity to receive instruction. You notice the independence there. See, and that's important, right? More and more, what you want to do is to choose to learn how to do it the best way.
Do you suppose that if we had that we would have tasks now assigned to us here had we not been in a planet of rebellion?
Well, yeah, if on the webinar she's wondering if we'd have tasks assigned to us now. If we actually didn't have, even if we had the rebellion, but Adam and Eve had managed to go through, technically 10,000 BC, you know, we would be at a quite advanced stage of, you know, of racial uplifting and blending and scientific development and all that sort of stuff. And so, yeah, you can imagine that would be more and more of humans being very directly involved in the planetary government and having tasks assigned to them and, you know, and being instructed how to do them just, you know, exactly as they should be done. And
that's what worries me about going to the mansion world. I mean, nobody's telling me what to do here. Very few. A little bit. You can go to some countries and they'll tell you everything.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you can pick certain cultures and especially as a female, you'll be told exactly what to do.
No planetary.
Yeah, right. Right.
Telling any of us what
right.
to do.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Pattern on.
Well,
we got a book.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a blueprint, and it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's, you know, down the road, the planet will get into that mode again at some point. All right, let's, we still have a little bit of time here.
The purpose of all this training and experience is to prepare you for admission to the higher and more spiritual training spheres of the super universe. Progress within a given realm is individual. A transition from one phase to another is usually by classes. The progression of eternity does not consist solely in spiritual development. Intellectual acquisition is also a part of universal education. The experience of the mind is broadened equally with the expansion of the spiritual horizon. Mind and spirit afforded like opportunities for training and advancement. But in all this superb training of mind and spirit, you are forever free from the handicaps of mortal flesh. No longer must you constantly referee the conflicting contentions of your divergent spiritual and material natures. At last, you are qualified to enjoy the unified urge of a glorified mind, long since divested of primitive animalistic trends towards things material. Before leaving the universe of Nebadon, most Urantia mortals will be afforded opportunity to serve for longer or shorter time as members of the Nebadon's Corps of Celestial Overseers.
So there, see, I was waiting until we got to that. You know, even mortals can be can be involved in this. You know, you see how they're really stressing what I was doing with the, you know, the training in contrast to the education, the use of words. You know, they're trying to point out how important this consecration of mind is. You know, and seeing they even said it, you know, gave you a visual there. Where was I? That whole, there's one thing to talk about the expansion of your spiritual horizon. You know, to have this vaster domain of unity to work in, but you know, to have the mind that can fill that space. Otherwise, that unity is of no use. If there isn't mind to bring that unity into relationship to your individuality, who cares if you're standing in a great big unity space? It's of no use to you. You have to have the mind that can encompass that whole unity space and bring it down, focus it down to you. And and you know, that last part in the second to last paragraph there. At last, you are qualified to enjoy the unified urge of a glorified mind. You know, that's part of, you know, that thrill that we were speaking to, that, you know, all of this commanding and perfect doing and stuff. But it's going to be, you know, thrilling. Long since divested of primitive animalistic trends towards things material. Okay, and, you know, and nowhere is that more poignant than where it was for Jesus with his apostles and disciples all the time. You know, the fact that what people call religious activity on this planet, you know, is such primitive animalistic trends towards things material. I mean, it's all about all kinds of rituals and whatnot, you know. Yeah, so, you know, they, you know, it's, you know, that's, they use so many words to describe that because they want you to be reminded again about how sad it is to record, you know, that we don't enrichen our lives here with genuine spirit instead of calling fancy material things spirit. Bring in genuine spirit, take the light and cultivating, have a genuine relationship with spirit. You know, instead of this elaborate material woo-woo, as you call religion, you know, and it is nothing but primitive and animalistic in the eyes of the universe. It doesn't matter how much, you know, you think it's very admirable that someone has this devotion to all this stuff. That's not the way the universe looks at it. They just roll their eyes like, oh, for Pete's sake, people. You know, can't you do something that's worth doing besides all this fancy material stuff, which, you know, is, I mean, you know, literally just fancy animal stuff. You're not availing, you're not using your personality to do any of that stuff. You can be loyal with your third adjutant. Okay? I mean, it's a pretty low-level thing to be loyal to all your religious duties. And so... yeah, so just I wanted to stress that because they obviously were there. All right, well, let's just leave it there then, and we'll pick up next time here. Let's take a moment here.